Hey everybody, Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast. Tell you about my friends at Gaslight. Check them out at the corner of Kings Highway and Shaw Boulevard in St. Louis, Missouri. If you haven't been by it yet, it's a really unique experience. A beautiful recording studio attached to a bar. Sharon is a wall with cha-cha-cha. Just come grab some tacos, some cold drinks, and listen to one of your favorite bands in the studio recording. It's really cool, and you should come check it out. A lot of fun events coming up, including Wednesday night, Gaslight session on April 19th with Leisure McCorkle, and April 20th, Thursday night, Pano AM and Backwash will be there. On Friday the 21st, the Five and Dimers will be there, and then on Sunday the 23rd, Gaslight session with Grass-Fed Mule and the Mighty Pines. So a lot of really great talent coming through there. Full listing of events and everything at GaslightSTL.com. Follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and reach out and see how you can get your band inside the studio recording and get yourself on the on there. So yeah, check it all out, GaslightSTL.com.
Podcast is kind of like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
This is Brad O. You're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri. Hanging out today at the Gaslight on Shaw Boulevard in St. Louis, Missouri with Brad Noe. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me, appreciate it.
And I invited a special guest co-host for the day. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, sir.
Lexi. We just recently met a couple months back and hanging out and talking about everything you're up to and stuff. But I'm excited to get Brad on the show here and talk about all his music and things and get to meet you guys because we just recently became Facebook friends. But this will be our first time actually getting to hang out and talk.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, man.
Awesome.
So I did a little bit of homework. I listened to some of the songs and some of the stuff you guys sent me, and that will be appearing on the record. And was really impressed. Like it sounded just a true like Southern rock kind of influence. Like I feel like in your voice, like just that, I don't know, just very very. Familiar to me. I don't know. Like I like a lot of that stuff, that old Southern rock stuff, and I feel like there's a just I love the storytelling aspect of it. Just a great singer songwriter and a guitar. Just that stripped down feel to it. A lot of it.
Yeah, that's basically where I'm rooted. I grew up listening to all types of music. You know, my dad had a bunch of vinyl. In the closet, so I'd always go raid the closet and drag the vinyl out and see what he had to offer, you know, and Steppenwolf and Elton John and Marshall Tucker Band, Neil Young, you know, and those different aspects of Rolling Stones, etc. My mom was more the countryside with Johnny Cash, and dad was like the Rolling Stones. So I was surrounded by all types of music growing up, you know. And then during the 90s, you know, I was liking Eric Clapton and Neil Young, and everybody else was like New Kids on the Block, you know, and I just didn't get it.
Yeah.
So I was always out, the odd duck out. And yeah, I'm 38, you know, and being my age now, I still feel I'm kind of an old soul, if you will.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, but we got a couple of the tracks
like I said, I'm just, I don't know. I like this stuff a lot. Like, it's kind of right in my wheelhouse of what I really like as a fan. Again, it's just like that singer-songwriter aspect of it. And that, at least, got a couple of tunes we want to throw in here. Track Halo. Disguise in Halo? Is that
Halo in Disguise.
Halo in Disguise. The proper title.
probably about 60 songs, and I've lost a lot. I could probably perform 40 of my own originals. Halo happened to be the last song I wrote. How it ended up on the album, I'm not quite sure. Some of the songs I had wrote when I was very young, I kind of just went through everything and quickly handpicked them and recorded them, and pretty much everything was recorded in 2 days, within 1 to 2 takes, and I like a live sound. I don't think life is perfect, so I don't think music should be perfect either. Sure. I think there should be realism in there, and that's why I did the way I did it.
Definitely, man. Yeah, I think a lot of people respond to that. I think a lot too much music today is way too, you know, precise.
That's the word. Yeah. Over-processed.
And it's like, it's nice to see something, you know, with some grit and you know, and those, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect. There's feeling to it. There's emotion. There's, you know, it's all.
I'll take feeling over, you know, talent any day, you know, and it's, you know, I think of karaoke, you know, and there's nothing wrong with it, because I have friends that host karaoke, and every now and then I'll pay them a visit and maybe sing, you know, Pearl Jam Black or something, you know, try to emulate Eddie as much as I can, you know, but or Johnny Cash or whatever, but, you know, I feel that that's perfection. You know, you practice a song so much, you've heard it 10 million times, and you get out there and you know exactly how to enunciate every word and everything like that. You know, as a writer and trying to form the songs, you know, that you're creating something from nothing, you know. And as I was recording, I was actually changing things as I was recording them, you know, because they still, you know, to this day, they're still taking their own life of their own.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, if I make another album, which I'm going to very soon, but I'm saying, like, down the road, if I decide to do, you know, some remakes of these tracks, which I'm probably going to, and they're going to be probably different, you know, it's just the way the wind blows.
Yeah.
It's more authentic that way. I mean, that's the word, is authenticity. Sure. When it comes to singer-songwriter stuff, and Brad's got that down.
Yeah. So. I was fortunate enough a while back when The Urge put together, they did a 20th anniversary of Receiving the Gift of Flavor, and they re-recorded the album live, and I went, I was able to be a part of that recording process, and it was, you know, they wanted to recreate these songs 20 years later instead of just like re-releasing the album. They wanted to redo it live because they do these songs slightly different now 20 years later than they did when they recorded it. So it was like, even with them, like, you know, again, these songs evolved over 20 years what they're doing now.
They just take, it takes a life of their own. There's still musicians out there that do it note for note, and, you know, exactly. I mean, I think that's insanity. I mean, sure, you know, I mean, if I was being paid millions, I guess I could, you know, they could twist my arm to do that, but yeah. I think it would still have to be a little bit different every time.
Yeah, and I think, again, you've got a ton of people that respond to that in big ways. Like, you look at groups like, you know, these jam bands and stuff, the Grateful Dead and Fish and things, and people really respond to that because it's something different every time.
They like their live albums more than, right. Yeah, exactly.
So they love seeing what they're going to do with that show, because it's going to be something different than the last show. And so I think there's something to that in a live performance. So.
And it's so different, recording versus live, you know, and I guess I really never understood that until I did it. And this not having the audience was a really drag for me.
Yeah.
And being able to get to that spot and focus why I wrote the songs, I had to really concentrate and to get to that moment of why I wrote the song, you know, and it took a lot out of me, especially when I was having difficulties with the process of recording. You know, I did all the recording myself, but I went to Sahar Studios to have it mixed. So, you know, with everything being said, it was all a very tedious learning process.
Yeah, definitely. You know? you said 60 songs you feel you've written, at least.
Yeah, and I've lost a lot 4 different times. I had them one time in a case. I played in St. Louis. I had all of them in a book. I left my case there, and then of course somebody snagged it. Then I had to write them all back out, and I had them on a computer another time, and the computer crashed, and I had them in a book another time, driving with my buddy in his S10 or whatever, and they all blew out the back, and it's just, you know, so it's fortunate that I have a memory left from my whole life of drinking that I was still able to remember the ones that I do remember.
Sure. You know,
which is about 40. So I got about 4 albums in me, and I hope that I can muster up enough soul in me to write more. When I was drinking all the time, and I've been 5 years sober, so it's it's a whole new experience. But I wrote Halo in the Sky sober. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably the only sober track on, you know, as far as writing it out. No, I take that back. There was a few on this album that were going through the struggle of sobriety.
Right.
And I don't want to get into all that, and I'm sure that the listeners can find out which ones are which, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, I think people also can respond to that too, because there's something relatable. You know, even if it might not necessarily be alcohol or substance, whatever it might be, but people relate to that, you know, just the whatever it is in their own personal life, and can respond to that and relate to. It makes you, you know, relatable too, even though it's a struggle and it's something we all deal with, different things. But yeah, addiction is it's no joke, man. It's tough stuff. So
I always, you know, when we were talking about vinyl earlier, you know, I remember, like, you know, listening to the Eagles or something, and, you know, versus Hotel California, you know, I'd flip it on side B and I'd listen to Sad Cafe, mm-hmm. and something like, you know, something along those lines. And I was always leaning more towards those. And I can't quote anybody else, but I feel that probably most of the best songs, according to the artist that wrote them, end up on side B.
Yeah.
So probably the only track on the whole album that anybody's going to truly like is going to be track 11, which is more upbeat. All the other ones are going to depress the hell out of everybody. So right. Hopefully there's a market for that.
Yeah. Sure. I don't know. I don't know what it says about, you know, me or, you know, but I love super sad, depressing music and stuff. Like, I mean, in my personal life, I'm very happy, but I'm a huge, like, Jason Isbell fan, and, like, again, he, his whole record, Southeastern, is, like, a lot of going through, dealing with alcoholism and stuff and getting sober and things, so there's a lot of similar stories in his songs at the time, and, but it's just, like, you know, it's something I really relate to with these songs, and again I love the music, man. But even though it's not the I do like happy, poppy, you know, fun stuff to dance around to, but
sure,
I do respond in a big way to just those super sad, tear out your heart songs and stuff. So you won a couple of more of the slower songs, sadder and things, as you played a couple of them live here for us, or just, again, these are just you solo acoustic for the live performance, but you did a song called On and Off Again. You got any story behind this track you care to share?
Sure, yeah, that one in particular. I had to, when I was going through sobriety, I literally almost died, and I had a stroke, and it took me a long time to actually learn how to do everything again. And my left arm, I literally could not pick up this glass that we're drinking right now, which is 7-Up, not vodka, by the way. And but yeah, you know, I had to relearn how to do everything, walk again, and I think that was mostly because of my blood pressure issue and everything. Not to get too much to my and my health issues, but on and off again, I had to move back in with my parents because I couldn't take care of myself, and it was for the first time in my life that I felt dependent on other people and I felt powerless. Mm-hmm. And on and off again, I you know, what I noticed the most was it seemed like I had a lot of friends, you know, and then when I got sober, it seemed like I had nobody. Yeah. And even going through the sobriety and all the things that I was dealing with, even, you know, I know it was hard on everybody, you know, and they just didn't want to see me like that. And I think pretty much most people thought I was going to check out. So on and off again, it was one of those that I wrote. I wrote it in my parents' basement. I, you know, had to crawl to and from the shower and the bathroom, and because I couldn't stand up because my heart would get erratic. And it was one of them tunes that it just, I felt like life was passing me by while I was sitting there and just hell, you know. And say much more about it than that, you know. There's some good things there, you know. I mean, obviously it's finding the strength to go on amongst all the bullshit. So I guess I can say bullshit.
Yeah, you can say whatever. Okay. It's on the internet. Yeah. Well, you, like I said, Lexi's here co-hosting, and you two have been performing out a lot together of recent, right? We just went two shows the last 2 days.
Yeah. Lexi, I met Lexi at an open mic, a year ago?
Yeah,
like
April 13th, last year. Yeah.
So I was at open mic at the brewery there in Belleville and, every Wednesday, and she came out, and that's how we met. And we started jamming, and I don't know, just kind of something that has happened over the last 2 days. I've always taken myself as kind of serious, and as a serious performer, I wanted everybody to take me as a serious performer. But lately, I've came across something new. I've just been feeling like, what the hell, you know, and just see where things go, you know. And it's cool to not be scared and to just try new things, you know. And I think it was really ridiculous for me to take myself that seriously and be like, oh, I have to do it this way and this way only. You know, I've been working with other artists too. You know, Mike Medili has been playing percussion for me. And
for us, actually, the other night.
Yeah, so. Yeah. You know, Lexi, she's jumped in on two shows, and so yeah, it's fun, you know.
Yeah,
Music should be about fun and not so much about tearing your heart out and stomping on it, you know. But it seemed like every time I had to write, and my lowest, you know, states of life is always when I wrote. So it's so and be old, but Hail in the Skies, I think you can see maybe a turning in the tide. So maybe there'd be some more upbeat stuff on the second album.
Yeah.
We do upbeat stuff when we do our duo thing for the most part. So. And I mean, with our voices, I'm like hoarse because I'm not used to doing 4 hours a night, right? So I sound like I've smoked for 20 years. But, you know, I think between the two of us, it's a really interesting dynamic because he's an acoustic player. I'm an electric player. So some of my strengths, some of my weaknesses, everything comes out all in one shot. So it's kind of fun, and we get to do songs that I've never gotten to do, and I think he's never got to do, so it's kind of fun.
Definitely. Well, we got a couple of dates to plug, speaking of the live shows and things. April 23rd at the Wild Sun Winery. Where's that located?
It's Hillsboro, Missouri.
Right.
It's a great place. I'll say this about the owners there. Fantastic people. When I was recording, Ed is one of the owners, and he called me personally and just said how much he loved my music. He heard it on Reverb Nation, and he's like, anything you need, I want to help you out because I believe in you, you know. Of course, I didn't take the help because that's me, but I thought that was one of the coolest things
for sure.
out of any venue I've ever played at. I mean, just great people, so, you know. This is not a shameless plug. I mean, go check them out. They're great folks, even if I'm out there.
They can come to Sid's Benefit after that, because Sid's Benefit's till 11 o'clock that night. So come on down to the archive after that for Sid Destructive Schlemmer's cancer benefit.
And even though this is your first appearance on the show, but you've been your voice has been on the show for past a couple weeks now with the commercial, right?
Yeah, that's kind of a funny story, too.
Yeah.
We, Lexi and I ended up going out to dinner or something. Or no, we went shopping, and we ended up seeing this cheesecake that we just thought was fantastic. So we bought it, you know, and we went home, and it was a variety deal. And there was this one that had, like, raspberry on it, so I think I ate, like, a piece and a half, and she did the same. The next thing we know, we like passed out on the couch at the same time, woke up like 4 hours later, you know, and we were drugged or something. I don't know what was going on. But she's like, shit, we got to do this commercial for my sister for the benefit, you know. And so I go, okay, let's do it. So I just read it straightforward, you know, one take. And then her sister liked Sean Connery. And I've never, ever once tried to do a Sean Connery impression. So I literally, I read it off as the best I could in my cheapest Sean Connery impression, and they ended up going with that, so yeah. Whatever. Maybe two segments of it actually sounded like him. I don't know.
It's great. Yeah.
It's not necessarily that you have to sound exactly like it. You pick up on something that you, like, for his comedic purposes, he finds something like, you know, his George Bush impression is nothing like the real George Bush, but he finds something that he finds funny in it, and he makes it, he owns that, and that becomes his, you know, impression. So maybe you're not too far off from the
It's hard to stay in character when you're reading so much. You know, I had a little thing that I had to read up of. And we did it as a joke. I mean, I didn't have any idea she was going to take it seriously.
He had to keep his back to me because I have my hand over my mouth, and my sister will tell you that I will laugh through anything. So I was like just trying to bury my head because I knew I was going to just start losing it. It was so funny. So
there's a Facebook video of Lexi's dog that I did a Sarah McLachlan Arms of the Angel singing voice along. And it's great. You need to check that out, too. I don't know why it's not viral. I really don't.
It should have been. I was in the other room, and I hear this, and I'm like, what is going on? And my dog's got his bowl, and it just, he made himself his own commercial, and it was really funny. So. Yeah. It's good.
Come out to the winery, and then head over to Sid's benefit at Archive Music House. And then we got Cinco de Mayo. You'll be over at Jay Fires in Waterloo, and that's the big CD release party, right?
Yes, sir. That's May 5th for all you English people out there. That will be my official CD release party, even though that I've still been selling them, and I gave some away earlier at a benefit I played at. But that is the official, so hopefully people still come out despite buying them and all that.
And merch, there'll be merch.
Yeah, there will be t-shirts and probably some bottle openers and cool stuff like that. So
yeah, very cool. It'll be a big night. So come out. And then a little bit off, but July 1st, you'll be at the Duck Room in Blueberry Hill, Del Mar Loop. And of Sea and Stone.
Yes, they're from out of Austin. They contacted me. I guess they heard me on Reverb Nation, the whole band voted and picked me that they wanted me to open for them. So I thought that was really cool. And I talked to him on the phone. Very nice guy. That should be fun.
Yeah, sounds like Reverb Nation has been good to you. Helping get the promotion out there.
I'll throw another name out. Pamela DeWine. She's a St. Louisan. She's been kind of my backbone and my cheerleader for a long time. She pushed me into recording. I had all these songs for a very long time, and she's like, "You really need to put them out on an album." I said, "I know." But she really got on my ass, and so she got me to do it. you know, she was there every step of the way, and I have to give her a lot of credit for that.
Yeah. Well, very cool. I'm excited. Like I said, I'm glad she pushed you to get this record out there and coming together nicely. We got another track from the studio, from the record, Prayers, that you wanted to play. Again, this will be available on that CD on May 5th.
So, or online.
Yeah, or online. Yeah.
Bradno.com.
There you go.
Or the parking lot. We'll sell it out of the trunk of the car. where nothing's beneath us at this point.
Right. is there any story around Prayers?
Sure. It's Prayers from a Gun is one of those weird ones. Almost every song I have ever written has came to me in a flash, and that's why I only have 40 versus 400. You know, I draw too, and I don't draw anymore, but when I used to, it used to come as a flash. And that's the only way that I can explain it. Mm-hmm. And I would have the urge to draw, and I would have to do it, and I would complete it, and I'd be happy with it. And the songs were the same way. They would come to me really quick, if they ever did, and they would be down within minutes, probably as fast as listening to them, in fact. And Prayers from a Gun was no exception to that. I actually was painting my house and all that, and I got my music room done, and when it was finally complete, I grabbed, you know, my first Martin, which I just played earlier. There, I've had that since I was 18, and I grabbed it off the wall, and I just played the song right there on the spot. And sometimes I don't know why I do what I do, and I reflect upon it later, and see what's in my subconscious. I'll leave Prayers from a Gun to the to the listener, you know.
Sure.
For me, I've had some personal experiences and some dreams that that may play a part in Prayers from a Gun. If I had to explain it, I would say that it probably spawns a form of you know, just absolute destruction, you know, and we all have that place in us, you know. There's a constant battle going on, and I think that's where the title comes from. You know, you have a gun, and then you have prayer, you know. So it's just like, you know, I don't know, you know, it's one of them that still perplexed me. Like I said, it just came out, and I wrote it down. I'm like, that was a weird one, you know.
Trumpets will sigh, and men these hearts will fail them, fear in their light. Who are we to judge their blades of hope? But when their deals come undone, it's prayers from a gun. Soul, it's all I need and makes me whole. All it takes to make you cry, all it takes to make you die.
Neil Young earlier, we were kind of talking about him off mic, but I mentioned listening to Stern, and I heard Neil Young on there, and he described a little bit his writing process in a very similar way. He was talking about, like, one time he had this, like, fever, and he was up in this, like, hospital bed for a long time, and, like, when he came out of that fever, I guess he was having some pretty elusive dreams and stuff and all this. And
sure.
When he came out of this fever, like, he wrote, like, I don't know, like, Cinnamon Girl and all these, like, huge hits. And, like, all came out of, like, one like, burst of inspiration, I guess, from that. But it was just kind of crazy to hear how these, you know, these songs just came to him in a flash like that, like, just like you described and stuff. So
yeah, Neil has always been a personal favorite for me because seems like he's done his own thing his own way, and screw you if you don't like it.
Right.
You know, and I love that. I just absolutely love that, you know. I mean, I look back on Neil Young's career, you know, he had Buffalo Springfield and Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And for him to walk away from such a sure bet just baffles me, you know. And I respect that so much because that means he's more about the music than he is the money. And that, I have all the respect in the world for Neil Young when it comes to that aspect, you know, because, I mean, who would do that? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Here's a band, you're guaranteed. And being Neil singing, which a lot of people say isn't good, he still pushed through and he did what he had to do. And I'm a huge fan. So, yeah, not only you know, as just a great humanitarian, but just musically, the guy's a genius.
Sure, and he's done it all in music too. Like his records,
he's not scared. Yeah. He's not scared at all. David Geffen off, you know, and it's great. It's fantastic.
Yeah, we talked. Farm Aid came up before we press record, and I was the only time I've been able to see Neil live was at a Farm Aid in Kansas City, and it was pretty awesome, man. It was really cool to see all those guys, Mellencamp and Willie and Lucas Nelson was there, and Jacob Dillon from Wallflowers was there, and so awesome. Yeah, it was great. Neil's he's still got it, man. He sounds great. And,
yeah, that dude, he's unstoppable. Every year he puts out an album out. I think the man's wrote over 600 songs.
Yeah.
And you maybe hear five on the radio.
Sure.
You know? But yeah. That's great. That means he's not scared to write what he wants.
Yeah.
You know? I love that.
Yeah. Well, we got one more. You played live for me called Run So Far. And again, this is just you and a guitar, man. That's one of my most favorite things. I don't know. I said it earlier, but like, it's what I truly love is just a songwriter and a guitar, and just you cut out all the extra flash and stuff. But it's a lot of fun to hear these songs come to life that way. Given you're performing them just solo acoustic live, are they? On the record, are these any different, or they kept it pretty? I know you said you did a lot of just self-recording, and I did hear some. You added there's some production, I think it was in Prayer or something. Kind of starts with like a chain or something, or kind of like a.
Oh, that would have been Halo in the Skies. That was the only song that we kind of had a little fun with.
Yeah.
Everything else I do, I use a kick pedal for that drum sound, and I just beef it up to where it sounds like a bomb's going off.
Right.
So, it's kind of goes back to, the old blues players. They used to throw a microphone in a suitcase, and they would stomp on that to get that thump sound, there's some newer technology out there. I've tried different things, and still maybe a block of wood with a mic, and it is still probably the best way, but I've added to that. I've simply just threw some reverb on it, made it sound like bombs are going off.
Yeah.
But as far as Halo in Disguise, it was fun, because I don't know, I just kept envisioning trains the whole time with Halo, I just feel like. It's about breaking free, so I had this imagery of trains and prisoners and breaking free of the chains. And so what we had did is Pamela Devine and I, we'd gone down to a train track down in Dupo, Cokie area, and kind of like isolated area, and I was actually literally striking the track with a pickaxe.
Yeah.
To get some of those sounds, so that's where they came from. So at least, it wasn't computer generated. Sure. It was actually done, literally with the rock cracking, and I was doing all that too. And so
very cool.
Yeah, we did made a whole day of it, and then we recorded actual trains, and you can hear some of that toward the end of Halo.
Kind of when I listen, it kind of reminds me kind of like an old Western, like a gunslinger walking in, like you kind of, it kind of sounds like the spurs or the boots or whatever, kind of, or something like that,
Definitely a lot of imagery going on with that song, for me it was, it's not my style at all. The song entirely is not my style, which is probably why people are going to like it.
And it's probably going to be the first video he does too, so it's probably going to be that song.
It's another reason why I put it at number 11, because I'm like, if you can make it through all the depressing songs, you can have your reward at the end for the sellout song. I don't want to call it a sellout because it was, the words were meaningful to me, and sure. I wrote it quick, and all my songs I've ever written were quick. but I feel they're worthy.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, you did you have anything you want to share with Run so far with that song?
You know, it kind of goes back to on and off again. You know, and drinking. I just feel that my whole life, I've always been in the fast lane. You know, and I've done pretty much everything I've ever wanted to do, you know, involving partying and sexual exploits, if I may dare, and just everything. And you're trying to fill a void. You're always trying to fill a void and be content and happy in life. And for most people that have that addictive personality, you just run so far, and then that you hit a brick wall. And I think that's what it is, you know. And, you know, there's always people like, oh, I'm not happy in St. Louis. I got to move to Florida to be happy, you know, which was what my ex-girlfriend did, you know. And but I hear it from so many people, you know. It's like, if you can't be happy with yourself, you're not going to be happy anywhere, you know. And I've been in a lot of places. I worked offshore for 18 years, you know, and down in the Gulf of Mexico. I've seen a lot of things. I've done a lot of things. And, you know, we're all doing our thing, and we're all living the best we can. And,
yeah,
you know, for some people, they grow up quick, and other people, they still got that nomad style about them. And but eventually, it all comes to a head.
Sure.
You know. You don't know.
Like I said, starting the show, this is first we really get to talk and things, but kind of given, you know, some of your history with your going to, you know, working offshore and everything, but like, y'all, are you originally from the area, from St. Louis area here? And
yeah, actually, my parents, they are all both, well, I should say their parents are from Missouri. But then they moved to the Cahokia area, and then when I was about 4 or 5, we moved outside of Waterloo, Illinois, in the country, and then I grew up in Waterloo, basically, until I was 16, and then, you know, did a military thing for a second, and then, you know, when I finally got my job, I dropped out of college and went offshore, and I just, the money was too good. You know, at one point, I was making, I don't know, it was like over $14,000 a month. I can say that because I don't make it now, you know, but, you know, it was a hard gig to give up, I'm not going to lie, but I wasn't fulfilled. Mm-hmm. Nothing I was doing was fulfilling me. You know, I don't want to sound cliche, but it's the truth. The whiskey, you know, and the women and everything, and it just it leaves an empty hole in you. It's fun, and then all of a sudden you feel like a piece of shit, you know, and you're like, what have I done to deserve living, you know? Like, what have I offered? And that's kind of where I started reflecting, and I started thinking about music, and I'm like, you know what? That's probably the purest form of me when I was just sitting in my room as a kid and learning how to play songs that I liked. You know, I remember playing Simple Man, you know, learning it, you know, Lynyrd Skynyrd, and I'm like, I just reflected on that, and it really felt emotional and true for me. So later down in life, you know, I I didn't expect to jump into music this late in life, but I did, and it's been good to me. I mean, I'm not living high on the hog by any means, but I'm paying my bills, and I can buy a cool pair of cowboy boots every now and then, and you know, equipment, guitars, etc. You know,
sure.
So
I danced with my mom to that. It's a Simple Man at my wedding. So it's a great song. Good one to start.
It's a great band. Yeah, you know?
For sure.
People shout out Freebird, and I play it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I won't do Wagon Wheel, though, just so I'm on the record. I won't ever play Wagon Wheel ever. But hey, shout out Freebird anytime. You got it. I'll do it.
What, Chris Stapleton, that's the story that somebody yelled it at a show, and he did the whole, like, 14-minute version on, you know, like, and just killed it, apparently. So, like, you know, you want to hear it? Here it is. Here you go.
Wow.
Like, so
I haven't heard that yet. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. He's another one of my favorites, and I'm glad he's getting some success right now. So.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So we're gonna wrap this thing up, and again, come out, check out Brad's record online. You can get it right now, or you can buy a copy online at
bradno.com.
Yeah. Yep. And you can follow along on Facebook at Brad No Music. And again, I come out of these dates, April 23rd at Wild Sun Winery. May 5th, Jay Fires in Waterloo for the CD release party. And July 1st at the Duck Room. So, and then plenty more dates going to be going on in there. There's some big ones we wanted to plug. All these dates are on
the website.
Facebook and the website and everything. So, I appreciate you two taking some time out to hang. And
we appreciate it.
It's a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Nice to meet you, brother.
Yeah, nice to meet you.